Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. There's no business like your business. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC.
This is a great question because here in Denver, we make it all about the Broncos. And even after two exhilarating championship games yesterday, first time ever, both games go to overtime. We're kind of left trying to see how it relates to the Broncos. This question comes in from Jim, who asks, Mark, what is your opinion of Andy Reid and whether or not he has what it takes to bring the Chiefs to a Super Bowl? Interesting. Good question. Because Andy Reid's not going anywhere.
No.
Is he the guy to take the Chiefs to a Super Bowl?
I think Andy Reid's a hell of a football coach.
That's not the question.
I do think he can take the Chiefs to a Super Bowl. He's overtime away from taking them to the Super Bowl. Like, why would I think he can't? Now, again, as you and I talk about all the time, players, you gotta have the players to get there. Their defense has got to be better. I mean, they've got to be better than they've been. They've got to be able to stop the run. They weren't able to get that done. I mean, I don't look at that like it's Andy Reid's fault. You know, Bill Belichick and his staff did a great job of eliminating drives and eliminating possessions. Some of that was, it's hard when you kick off to the opponent and they go 8 minutes for a touchdown drive and you came out of the locker room and then you sit there for 8 minutes, which is what, 30 minutes real time, and it's 19 degrees out. And it's hard to get into a rhythm. And so, I would say the other thing I always talk about with high flying offenses, Mike, is come playoff time, if you get out of rhythm when you're a pass first oriented football team, it's hard when you're out of rhythm and it's cold and you've been on the sideline. And at one point going into halftime, I mean, the Patriots had 20 some odd minutes of time of possession. And, it was like 20 to 5 minutes of possession. And it's hard to get yourself back into an offensive rhythm. Now, they did. Came out of halftime, they got themselves back into offensive rhythm, and they were incredible in the fourth quarter. But, I give a lot of that credit to New England. Now, I will say this about the Patriots, and I think this part about them is true. I think they do a better job than any team in the league of, during the course of a regular season, developing players and having those guys play well down the stretch. Defensively, they're always picking 28, 29, 30, 31st, whatever it is. And they do a better job than anybody in the National Football League of developing guys over the course of the season and having them play at a high level come playoff time.
Well, look at what they did at the running back position yesterday. It was all Sony Michel at the beginning running the football. Then it was James White getting him involved in running and throwing him the football. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the game, absolute crunch time, with the Super Bowl on the line, Sony Michel's nowhere to be found. James White is nowhere to be found. Rex Burkhead is the guy.
Right.
Who does that?
The Patriots. It's the ultimate situational football. And, I'm sure if you sat down and had a conversation with them, they would have a reason why they did it that way. A reason the rest of us have no clue on. Do you know also that Gronkowski played every offensive snap? Never came off the field.
Yeah, something like 97 snaps or
97
something like that.
Snaps. I mean, there's a method to their madness. There's a reason. And I think this is one thing that you want to talk about. We talk about differences all the time. You want to talk about similarities between Bill Belichick and between Sean McVay. Everything they do has a reason. And the reason isn't that's just because of the way we do it. The reason is explained. The players know. I was talking to Andrew Whitworth, the left tackle of the Rams, said, we know exactly why every play is called, why we're doing what we're doing, what we're trying to set up. Every play has a purpose. And it is conveyed to us exactly what that purpose is. And if you have a question about it or you don't agree with it, it's fine to have a discussion about it. We'll discuss it, you know, and we'll come to some type of consensus. But I think both of those teams, their players have a more in-depth knowledge of why they're trying to do what they're trying to do.
All right, I'm going to throw some raw meat to the coaching means everything mm-hmm. crowd out there, since the question mark was about Andy Reid. So how is it that Andy Reid was so ill-prepared for what the Patriots threw at him early on that they went scoreless? What was it, first time ever since Andy Reid's been coaching the Chiefs, regular season or postseason, that held scoreless in the first half? Okay?
Okay.
Wasn't ready. But here's the part that I'll lend some credence to the idea that I always say coaching matters, players matter more.
Right.
Okay, here's your coaching matters part. Tyreek Hill, in the last two regular season games against the Patriots, last year, 7 catches, 133 yards and a touchdown on 8 targets.
Mm-hmm.
This year, 7 catches, 142 yards, 3 touchdowns on 12 targets. In the last two regular season games, Tyreek Hill had 14 catches for 275 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 20 targets.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, 1 catch, 42 yards, 3 targets.
Right. And if you want to...
How is it that
right.
you let your biggest weapon get taken out of the game that way?
Here would be my counter to that. They double teamed him, and you can look at that as, hey, like everybody else is one-on-one, so we've got to be able to hit those things, right? And I get that philosophical approach. But that guy is so damn good at run after the catch and everything else that why did you not hand him the ball on a jet sweep? Why did you not fake a jet sweep and run a screen to him? Why did you not find a way to get him the ball in his hands behind the line of scrimmage and let him run? Let him do some things.
What about like, one of those bunch things you always talk about where literally it's 3 receivers in a little cluster and he's maybe behind 2 guys and now they all scatter.
Right.
Go ahead, double team that.
Right, clear it and then run a underneath crossing route to him, you know. There has to be and I'm not saying you have to let a player dictate, but when a guy is that dynamic and having talked to many offensive or defensive coordinators about him in particular saying that that's the fastest guy I've ever seen on a football field, come on, get him in a bunch and run a shallow cross. You can't, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're double teaming him with a deep and an underneath guy, if you're running across a formation and you've got some sort of, you know, of man, like some sort of cover one with a deep safety over the middle, if you're running an underneath crossing route to him, I don't care that he's double teamed. The double team is now rendered ineffective because one guy is 11 yards deep. It doesn't matter anymore, right? Let him catch it at 3 yards and then let him run. Man, that guy can outrun anybody.
Here's what's inexcusable about it, Mark. Sammy Watkins had 8 targets last night. Damian Williams had 8 targets last night. The running back. Tyreek Hill had 3.
Yeah.
Let the second guessing of Andy Reid continue.
That part's inexcusable. And like I said, You're going, hey man, we'll run him deep and let them use 2 guys on him. That means we're one-on-one all over the place. We should be able, like Travis Kelce should be able to win that. Like I understand, I understand both sides of the equation, Mike. But still, Tyreek Hill is the fastest, most dynamic player in football. You should find a way to get the ball in his hands behind the line of scrimmage on some shallow crosses and things of that nature and let him catch the ball and run after the catch. Like that to me is a coaching error with a great player where you don't find a way to at least let him touch the ball a little bit more.
Travis Kelce came up small yesterday.
Really
small. I know you must have taken a little satisfaction out of that one.
I did. Plus that goofy McDonald's commercial. He's such a toolbox in that commercial. Toolbox.
Three catches for 23 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Here's the Patriots on offense. You want to talk about the Chiefs? One of the things everybody points to Andy Reid. Patriots ran 94 plays, 524 yards total offense, went 13 of 19 on third down, rushed for 176 yards, averaged 5.6 yards per play, went 4 of 5 in the red zone, had the ball for 43 minutes and 59 seconds. 44 minutes time of possession.
Merrill in Littleton asks, you think D. Ford and the Chiefs now know the meaning of death by inches now? Okay. How about that play? D. Ford's wearing the goat horns.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't line up offsides, that's an interception. Off Gronkowski's fingertips. Ball game's over.
Right.
How do you... Is there any defense? I heard it suggested by Jeff Saturday. I was listening to him say that what happens is that as a pass rusher, you're not automatically just looking at the football, that you're setting your stance based on the gap between you and the offensive lineman mm-hmm. that you're lined up against. So if the offensive lineman on that play takes a little deeper set.
Right.
You're just conditioned, you see space,
right.
And you move into that space, not even aware that if you just turn your head to the left, you can realize right. that you're offside. Any defense there? Go ahead, offensive lineman. Talk about how you guys sucker in these unwitting defensive linemen.
Well, that just goes to show you that defensive players, not bright. And, you know, oftentimes when you're off the ball like that, because I want to get off the ball as much as I can get off the ball without getting called. And you tend to get that, you know, that flying, like that flying V formation, if you will. You know, it's like it's geese flying south for the winter. And occasionally you'll get called for that. But that's your job, man. You got to be onside. You got to look at the ball. I get it. But that would be called lack of attention to detail, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that just be called not paying attention to, you know, to what you're supposed to be doing? It just is, again, that's another one of those inexcusable, you can't just line up in the neutral zone. It's just
selfish?
Well, that one's not like I'm trying to set the sack record. That one's just lack of attention to detail.
So Vaughn was selfish.
Yeah,
this was just lack of attention to detail.
Vaughn was selfish. This one was just stupid.
There is a difference.
Yes, there is
a difference. There is a difference.
Look down the line of scrimmage. Make sure you're onside, you know?
Rolling in here on the RamosLaw.com text line, can we all just put our pride down and finally admit that Rob Gronkowski is the best tight end in history?
I was never going to give you don't get any argument out of me on that. He's a complete, in a day and age where tight ends want to be paid because they think they're wide receivers, that dude does it all. You mean line up outside and beat one-on-one? Okay. Want me to line up inside, run a slant? Okay. Want me to cross formation and block a defensive end? All right. How about outside linebacker? Good. How about motioning halfway across the formation and trapping a nose guard? I can do that. Like, there's nothing that dude can't do. He is as good as it gets. And I'll give you that. Best tight end in the history of the game. You wouldn't get an argument out of me on that one.
There is something that I, as a football fan, admire to the idea that, I mean, the Chiefs, when he lined up wide
mm-hmm.
on that pass that he ended up catching down by the goal line.
Right.
Chiefs knew the ball was going to him, right?
Sure, he was lined up one-on-one with Eric Berry. Anytime you run the safety out there to cover him and he's impressed, you know it's man. And Brady, and was it third down or fourth down on that particular one? It was third down.
That was third down.
Third down in like three or four.
I think that
or
was a third and five.
Yeah. And you just run on
I
the
think
fade.
That was actually the play after the offside, wasn't it? I believe it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When the, yeah, okay.
But there's something about the idea. That's why I keep banging the drum that it still comes down to players making plays. I mean, that was a play where everybody knew the ball was going to him. Brady still had to make the throw. Barry had good coverage.
You know, coverage,
just,
yeah.
He just went up. Bigger guy went up, muscled the ball away, held onto it.
Yeah.
You know, it's players making plays. Mahomes was making plays. I mean, that play in, when he rolled to his right and threw that, I mean, the arm angles that this kid throws the ball with is just stupid.
Yeah, he
I mean,
is.
He had one where he didn't even look. Mm-hmm. He did the no look. It was like Magic Johnson delivering a pass to James Worthy on the break. He was just like a no look, just, you know, just flipping it out there like that.
Yeah, the guy is incredible. And the fourth quarter, what a treat that fourth quarter was.
That was good stuff. That was a 17-7 game late in the third.
Mm-hmm.
Ends up going 31-31 into overtime. We know how it ended up. Some more here on the RamosLive.com text line from Jose. Mark, stop being such a Brady cheerleader and make a legitimate argument for the overtime rules. If Kansas City had got the ball and Precious Tom never got to touch it, you would be throwing a hissy fit today.
I know. I wouldn't. I've been very consistent. If you've ever listened to me, I've been very consistent. And I would be exactly the same way if the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl. If Mahomes would have gotten the ball and driven down, I'd have said the exact same thing. You get an opportunity to stop them, you got to stop them. You got to make them kick a field goal so you get the opportunity to touch the ball. I have never, ever one time wavered on that rule. I don't care if the Broncos would have been in that situation. You get an opportunity. Your defense has an opportunity to stop them. It doesn't bother me. And it's called a team for a reason. It's the greatest team sport in all sports. And your team, the defensive aspect of your team, that part of your team didn't do its job.
Another one here. Tony Romo isn't my favorite, but shouldn't Kansas City know what is happening on a play if he can call out the play?
Of course they do.
They knew it was coming.
Sure they did.
They knew the ball was going to Edelman on those first two third and tens.
When he motioned inside, they knew they were getting a stack release. They knew what was going on. I mean, what you have to understand is knowing what's coming and being able to stop it. Like I don't care how good your defense is. If the game or the play is perfectly executed, you can't stop it. You know, it's like the flip out he had to James White, where James White caught it on his back hip, completely covered. Like that you can't cover it any better than that. As a matter of fact, the fade to Gronkowski, come on, Eric Berry had that perfectly covered. There is no defense for the perfectly executed throw or the perfectly executed play. You should say it all the time, man. I don't care that they know that I'm pulling or that we're running or whatever. We're better than them. You know, it's like White Goodman. We're better than you, and we know it, you know? I mean,
switching gears a little bit, we had Cecil Lammy on earlier, and you'll hear from Cecil coming up here at the top of the hour with Pritch. He's down at the Senior Bowl, and he's only been there a day, and he says everything he's hearing, Broncos' number one target at quarterback is Drew Lock from Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
The book on Lock is this: has Jay Cutler-type talent with Eli Manning type demeanor, meaning Jay Cutler talent with sort of a bookish, nerdish type personality.
Right.
What do you think of that combination?
Oh, I think it's fine as long as you're a competitor. Remember, Eli Manning's, you know, Eli Manning until he won a championship. It was, this guy doesn't have the fire. This guy doesn't have, you know, he's got too much Eeyore in him. Oh, woe is me. Oh, he mopes around and stuff. And then when he wins, all of a sudden it was, oh, he's got ice water in his veins. A guy, you know, I mean, it just, it's, you know, perception. It's just utter stupidity. If the guy prepares, he's a professional, he works his butt off and stuff, you know, he's just got to be, to lead a football team, especially that quarter, at the quarterback position, I think you just have to be authentic. You can't be something that you're not. Andrew Luck doesn't strike me as a, you know, as, you know, fire and brimstone type of guy, but, you know, I'm pretty sure the guys like playing with him.
I never liked Jay Cutler. I never liked his personality, but damn, that guy was talented. I mean, that guy, when you go into the lab and draw up what you want in a quarterback, mm-hmm. I mean, he had it all, which is what makes his career so tragic from a sports sense, because he really kind of pissed it all away. He really did. I mean, he just did. But he had everything. He had size. He had the arm.
Right.
Had the intelligence.
Right.
Had the mobility.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really, you know, I always said for years that if you held a skills competition among all quarterbacks, this guy would probably win it.
Right.
Year after year. That talented. And don't give me Paxton Lynch talent. I mean, Jay Cutler was far more talented than Paxton Lynch is or ever will be. Oh. So if Drew Lock has Jay Cutler type talent, don't you have to bet on that kind of talent?
Well,
don't you have to take a chance on that kind of talent?
The point is this, Mike. I hope not. I hope that the mentality is what you take a chance on. I mean, have we not been burned with Jay Cutler and Paxton Lynch when it comes to let's gamble on talent?
Right.
Did you ever see the videos of Tom Brady shirtless at the combine? You weren't gambling on talent. You kept four quarterbacks to keep Tom Brady because there was something about his personality, not about his skill set, not about his athleticism, not about his talent. There was something about him that you said, this guy's special. Like, that's what I want you to be able to determine. That's what I want you to be able to look at. Is it easy? No. You know what? But if it was easy, your critics would be doing it. If it was easy, the guys writing for the Post would be doing it.
All right. So when you hear Drew Lock described that way,
I shouldn't say the Post. I should say the bloggers would be doing it. You guys like you.
I'm not a blogger. I don't write blogs. I wrote a blog.
Weird.
I write columns.
You've written blogs.
But is that the description of Locke, his personality, does that, your gut feeling, your gut reaction, is that somebody that doesn't love football?
No, that's not my gut reaction isn't that way at all about, of course, I've never met the kid,
right.
But, no, goofy and I don't have any issue with that. I mean, there's all kinds of different people from different backgrounds that are, you know, that are motivated and driven differently. But bottom line is you just need somebody who's driven. It doesn't matter where they come from. I mean, you know, Andrew Luck has got, you know, his dad had success. His dad played his dad is a administrator and has done, had an unbelievable career. It's not like Andrew Luck probably needed a play in the NFL, but he's driven. So I just need guys that are driven.
Well, as Cecil will tell you coming up at the top of the hour, his mission this week is to find out who Drew Lock is.
Mm-hmm.
The talent's there. Now, is this guy different than Paxton Lynch and Jay Cutler? Because if he is, all right, now maybe you're intrigued. Maybe that's the guy you target at number 10. Maybe it's a guy you might have to end up moving up for in the draft. Because you know how people hyperventilate and overreact mm-hmm. to quarterback prospects, and they'll end up going higher than they should. And once again, even for what is considered to be a down quarterback class, we'll probably see at least four go in the first round. Four. Not like the Hall of Fame five.
No.
Like the, I mean, please. five guys. They're all going to the Hall of Fame.
It's incredible.
The Hall of Fame five.
I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, man, we got a text that I've never seen one like this. I can't wait to see how you react to this one, Stink. This is going to be an all-timer.
I'm intrigued.
And it's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.
All right, let's say good morning to our Denver 7 Bronco insider, the one and only Troy Rank. Morning, Troy.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Doing great, Troy. Doing really good. What did the Broncos learn from watching these playoffs and specifically for watching the AFC Championship game?
Well, you got to be able to score points. You got to have better quarterback play, number one. And you got to play more disciplined football. I mean, those teams are just better than them right now. I will say this, Mark. I walked away from the AFC Championship game more impressed with what Denver did to get to the Super Bowl 50. They were in a similar position with Brady, furious rally, and held him off with a play by Tlaib and Roby to end that game. But I just think it shows you need better quarterback play. But you have to be in a matchup league, Mark, and you do this for a living, you know, as an analyst. They has got to be able to be more of a chameleon in this matchup league and take advantage of things. I mean, that's what I respect the Patriots for. One week they can throw 50 times, the next week they can run 45 times, and they can use guys and maximize their skill set. No one thinks Rex Burkhead's a great player, yet he fits a role. Then James White comes in, and then it's Hogan when they need it. I mean, they just, these parts that I don't know fit at other places, they turn into valuable resources. So that's what I watch when I watch the Patriots. They maximize their players, their discipline. But, again, let's not be naive. Broncos need better quarterback play.
But you know what? There is some hope when you look at what the Chiefs did not do defensively and what the Broncos were able to do against Tom Brady. And you referenced it. Brady didn't get hit yesterday. There was one quarterback hit credited to Kansas City. No sacks, one quarterback hit. And you juxtapose that with what happened when Brady had to play here, especially in 2015. At least the Broncos have that. They have pass rushers. And that's not a bad place to start.
No, that's a good foundation with Vaughn and Bradley Chubb. You're going to probably need to add one more guy. Maybe that is Jeff Holland. Maybe he's already here. But you have to get Brady off his spot. I was surprised that Jones wasn't able to have a middle rush. I mean, the Patriots line played well. I mean, they dominated the line of scrimmage for basically the first 2.5 quarters. But for Brady, as we saw in the Super Bowl year, Derek Wolfe was huge in that game. Like, you have to get him off his spot. He's not going to run around and give you chances to sack him that way, but you have to get to him, make him step up, and there's got to be someone in his face. And you're right. I mean, at the end of the game, did Brady's jersey have even one grass stain on it? I mean, he played an overtime game. That part was surprising because the Chiefs, I believe, were tied for the league lead in sacks going in to this game. I mean, they had been good. I mean, Dee Ford had a great year. Jones had a great year, and they were, frankly, a non-factor other than Ford's just ridiculous penalty on that offsides call.
Yeah, no, it was ridiculous. What about this Super Bowl championship team or this Super Bowl championship game with the Rams? And, you know, all the former Broncos that are on it. I mean, is this one thing that we look at and say, man, that's really exciting, or is this going to haunt the Broncos a little bit with guys like Aqib Talib playing the Super Bowl, Wade Phillips, you know, coaching in the Super Bowl that was here, that should still be here in many people's estimations if they would have just pointed up the dough and paid the guy. Obviously, C.J. Anderson and the run he's had with the Rams. How do you expect the folks over there at Dove Valley to kind of view this game?
Well, it's different, you know, when you moved on from those players and they do well. I get that. One thing I learned from my baseball site from Billy Bean about the zero-sum game of trades. When you move a guy, all you're worried about is what you get back and how is my team better from that trade. I don't worry about what moves on. So as a writer, I'm happy for those guys. I mean, I really enjoyed covering all three of those guys. I was texting CJ before the game, text him afterward and talked to him. I'm happy for him. I mean, he's a guy I like. Worked hard, had a 1,000-yard season last year. This year was a roller coaster ride. Happy for him. Aqib Talib, I've told everyone, he was the soundtrack of the defense. He electrified the room when he walked in. He was a presence and a guy that was unlike any I've really ever covered. And he was so smart at football. Like, he had this reputation of being, you know, this kind of dirty player and all this baggage, which, you know, some of it's well-deserved. I don't know that I've ever talked to he and Chris Harris. They could have taught a PhD class in how to play cornerback. I mean, just talking to him about the position made you smarter. And Wade Phillips is just unique. He'd been in the game this long to be so youthful and to get young players to respond to him. Players, Mark, who are almost 50 years younger than him, on most of these guys who respond to him in a way that's so cool to see. So I'm happy for him. You know, as Broncos, you know, that's me. I don't embrace the bitterness or anger. You moved on. You know, CJ, they got Phillip Lindsay. They were always moving on from that money. And it, you know, in the case of Talib, he wasn't a fit here anymore. They were ready to move on. He was ready to move on. He did not get along with Coach Joseph and that previous coaching staff. That's, you know, and he wouldn't have played beyond this year anyway with them. They were going to move on one way or the other. That one hurt because Roby didn't perform. Wade Phillips' case, you could have paid him, no doubt. Joe Woods, you know, you gambled that Joe Woods was ready and he wasn't. But again, that happens in sports. So for me, I look at the positives and say, hey, I'm happy for those guys. They led us to one. I hope they get another one. But in pro sports, that rarely happens.
All right, should C.J. Anderson then move on? And how about, you know, reportedly saw a couple of Denver reporters yesterday in the locker room and said, hey, tell John Elway, ha-ha. Does he need to show a little bit more class in that moment? Remember, he was here. He was here 5 years. He was here right. 5 years, and it wasn't until that fifth year that he finally cracked 1,000 yards. And 1,000 yards right. is you know, 62 yards a game over a course of a 16-game season.
Yeah, again, it's hard to take the high road in an emotional locker room after a game and to say, oh, everything's good. I wish everyone would. Again, it's easier for me. Objectively, I don't have emotion attached to this. As an athlete, these guys are type A personalities in ways that most people wouldn't understand. I mean, it's why they're great. I mean, they are just so competitive. So if somebody tells you you can't do something, which is when you get cut, that's what you're being told. I get it. I mean, that's why it's easy to take the high road, but it's hard. It's hard for athletes. It's very difficult for them to concede anything that related to their position or demotion was warranted. That's just not professional athletes that I've covered. It takes a little bit of time and years away from their career to realize that. In the moment, I mean, ask Mark. I mean, how many guys in the moment have a very, very good grasp of who they are as a player when their career is declining? I'd say 1%, 2%. That's just what makes them professional athletes. It's what got them to that level.
I'm still bitter about the way it ended for me in Washington, and I'll never lose it. And me, I love it. I love C.J. Anderson giving, you know, the proverbial, you know, pound sand up yours to the organization. I think that competitiveness is what sets guys apart. Troy, man, we really appreciate you. Have a great day.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Bronco Insider, brought to us by Tranny Law. Have you or someone you know been charged with a DUI? Call for a free consultation at 303-333-1816 or TRANILaw.com. Coming up, I've never, ever, ever in 4 years seen somebody challenge Mark like this next guy is going to do.
Is it Skim?
You'll have to decide whether or not this is Skim. It's certainly not written like Skim. You'll hear it next. Well, apparently this listener, texter, has had it up to here with your appreciation for Tom Brady. Here it is.
Really?
Here it is.
Okay.
Mark, you're such an idiot, and I'd like to see you face to face. You're not the only big guy that can bench press 300 pounds. You need to realize that even if Kansas City would have stopped New England on that final drive, the referees would have made another blatant call and given them a whole new set of downs. Stop being a jackass on their behalf. Ooh, let's meet out behind the school.
First off.
3 o'clock. Here we go.
First off, I bench 300 pounds. I rep 300 pounds. Sally. All right. That's the first thing you need to know. Second, pretty easy to find.
Now, we're not advocating you guys rumbling.
No. Listen, if that guy met me face to face, it'd be trickling down his leg. All right. That is as skim could be.
That is skim milk.
So, whatever.
Did you think the officials were in the bag for the Patriots yesterday? What about that roughing the passer call that was just a brush? Just a brush against the face.
That was a horrendous call. What about the pick play that Watkins got the ball down the sideline? That was clearly downfield, clearly should have been a penalty that went in the Chiefs' favor. What about that one? That wasn't called.
Stop making sense, Mark!
Right. I mean, come on.
You're disturbing the narrative.
The issue being is that the officiating stinks. We all get that, right? It stinks both ways. And it does. And even when it stinks in the favor of the Patriots or, you know, the opposite way, the Patriots find a way to win. They find a way to overcome it. Unlike the Saints who sat there and created a conniption and worried about, you know, I mean, I thought the Saints lost total composure because they had that game won and that's, you know, I thought the Rams responded to that more effectively. Now, I know the call went in their favor, but I just look at it like the Patriots got picked. You know, they got a terrible pick call that didn't get called. Bill Belichick tried to smash his
yes, he did.
His Microsoft tablet, and then they moved on.
What about the Edelman muff? That one surprised me from the standpoint that I don't think he touched it either.
Mm.
But the call on the field was a muff. And the idea behind it is it needs to be clear, conclusive evidence to overturn a call.
Right.
Did you see clear and conclusive?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah, I didn't. It never touched, because they had so many of those up close angles that never, you know, they'd show it one way and you're like, oh, I don't know. And then they showed the reverse angle and you go, oh yeah, that didn't touch him. So yeah, I mean, that one was.
But see, again, it comes back to the inconsistency of replay. I mean, that's the thing about it. Replay is supposed to get it right, and yet there seems to be, as all of us who watch football every week, there seems to be a lot of inconsistency when it comes to what is conclusive, what isn't conclusive. Boy, it sure looked like that was enough to overturn it, but then they come out and say, due to insufficient evidence, you know, the play on the call on the field stands.
The best explanation I've ever heard in regards to the instant replay and all those things, Mike, is put a group of 8-year-olds that don't have any, they don't care who wins. They just like football. Say, did this touch Julian Edelman? Look at this angle. Look at this angle. And they all go, nah, it doesn't look like it touched him. All right, good. We move on. I just don't like the implementation and the way they, you know, the way they do it. Like I've always said, if it's important to get it right, then it should be important to get it right all the time, not just when you have a challenge. I don't understand why it can't just be, if there's something that's close, if it's a bang bang play, it's something that's close, there's a replay official up in the box that is watching the game that just buzzes down and says, hey man, I want to take a look at this. Hey, nothing to see here, we move on. Or hey, we need to go to New York for this, for a decision. I don't understand why that doesn't seem that complicated to me. It really doesn't.
Well, what we saw yesterday, first of all, the non-PI call, and the debate that comes out of overtime, and that a coin flip decided who gets the ball and the other team did not get a chance to get the ball. Do we get any changes from that? Will there be changes?
I mean,
we know this league. We know this league well enough to know. They are very reactionary. There isn't a league that we follow in sports that changes its rules as much as the NFL does.
I think they're going to look hard and heavy at changing some instant replay rules. I don't think there's any question that they're going to look at that, Mike. I don't think they're going to change the overtime rule. And I think they look at it, I think for the most part, they look at it like I look at it, is this game, you hear coaches say it all the time, all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams, all three phases, all three phases, all three phases. Now all of a sudden, we get an overtime coin toss, and we want to say, well, this is not about all three phases, it's just about our quarterback. It's about our offense. That doesn't make sense to me. This game is about all three phases. And you gotta be able to play them all. And that's why it's always driven me crazy when they say, offense wins it, or defense wins championships, or this year it's offense wins it, best of most prolific offense. No, it's complete teams win championships. I'll never forget, and I'm sad that we never did it as a football team. When the New England Patriots had their first Super Bowl to start all this run against the Rams back in what? 2000, 2001, whatever it was, when they didn't introduce each other or offense or defense, they came out as a team, the New England Patriots, and they all came out together. I was like, damn, I wish we would have thought of that, because that was one of the coolest things I'd seen. And that to me is, you know, that's a difference. That's the difference making.
Guys, I'm tired of all the crying about the refs. Bad calls are part of the game. You got to be good enough to overcome the calls. Brady did. Breeze had a chance to win and throw a pick. Come on, man. That's from Vince. Yeah, I get what you're saying, but, you know, the Ravens had to make more plays after the ball went over Raheem Moore's head.
Mm-hmm.
But if he makes that play, the game's over. It is over.
Right.
There were other plays that the Rams needed to make even after that non-PI call. But if the right call is made, right, the game is over.
And you still had, I mean, one, the two plays before that, if you run it twice, the Rams have to call both of their timeouts that remain. You threw an incomplete pass, albeit an errant pass by Drew Brees, one that he should complete. But if you run it there, you run it there, then you're a third down and you say, hey, do we want to run it again, or now do we want to throw it, right? But the bottom line, they have no more timeouts, and I would think you would run it again just to keep the clock moving. Then you're inside, well inside a minute, you line up to kick a field goal, and bottom line is, when you kick it back to the Rams, they have what, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, whatever it is. Like, that was mismanaged by Sean Payton. Completely mismanaged. And then, you know, Jared Goff makes an unbelievable play where Everett is completely covered. He scrambles out, looks like he's going to throw it away. Then he kind of throws it almost Mahomes-esque across his body a little bit. Everett catches it and gets another 15, 20 yards after the catch to put them in field goal range. You make that play. Like, you know, I still am one of those guys that never comes down to one play. There are so many things that go on. Although, you know, you can make a compelling case that it came down to that one play. I get it, but there's still plenty of plays to be made.
Well, it is set. Rams and the Patriots, we're prepared to cover it. We'll be in Atlanta and watch us next week from Radio Row on the Low T Cam at 1043thefan.com. Cecil is in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. That was a very impactful Senior Bowl last year when it came to the Broncos draft. Will it be that way this year? We'll hear from Cecil and Pritch coming up next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.